Happy Friday. So do appreciate you being here this morning. Pritzker, he's showing us who he truly is. He's kind of showing us his true colors when he was asked by Fox News Brett Baer about ICE and their actions in Chicago. And he was asked a very important question, and his response to it is pretty telling. He's showing us who he truly is in his response. So I'll be talking about that this morning. I'm also going to be talking about Democrats losing their minds. They are melting down over Trump's ballroom. I don't know. This has been a thing for the last couple of days. I didn't really want to address it. I've talked about Trump's ballroom before. Not using any taxpayer dollars, so why do I give a crap? I don't. He's not using taxpayer dollars. Even if he was, there's been prior presidents, Democrats, who have used taxpayer dollars to make renovations to the people's house. And they're losing it. And Hakeem Jeffries is out there now, and he's warning anyone who's funding or helping fund the ballroom, you know, private donations to fund this ballroom, which I'm really excited for because it's going to seat more people. You can fit anything that renovates the White House to where you can fit more people in. I'm for that. That sounds cool. It's the people's house. It's going to be a bigger ballroom where he can host more people. And, you know, Hakeem is out there issuing a warning to anyone who is privately funding this thing. So we're going to get to that. And then surprise, surprise, Virginia Democrats, they pull a fast one. Okay, they do this last minute redistricting thing. This is a desperate attempt to try to sideline, to try to stop Winsome Sears' race, I think. So they do a redistricting session. It's a special session, Virginia, and it will really prohibit Winsome Sears from campaigning during the time of special session. She's the current lieutenant governor. And they did this on purpose. It was political because they can't win on their ideas. So they have to pull things out of their asses. And surprise, the Virginia Dems, they pull a fast one. So we're going to get to all of it, but let's start in Illinois, Chicago. In recent weeks, things have been pretty intense. Okay, federal immigration enforcement, they have been here. They've ramped up their efforts to track down and detain criminal illegal aliens in the Windy City. And they've been doing this amidst, we've covered it here, doxing far left whacktivists. I don't like to call them activists. They're whacktivists. They're violent. They've created little bombs, brought guns to these anti-ICE protests, rammed ICE vehicles. So there's been so much that has gone on. You remember when I told you about in Chicago, Brighton Park, actually, it was a woman, she was armed and she had been rammed a ICE vehicle. ICE was wanting the local Chicago Police Department's help. And there was a confusion, I guess, because the DHS, they said, oh, we called for help. You know, have you ever seen that from Tiger King where he goes, I called for help twice, not an F you. What do you need? Nothing. You guys remember the clip from Tiger King. But they called for help and the CPD said, screw you guys, we're not coming. Essentially, that's what happened there. And DHS said, like, what the heck? If, you know, your fellow men and women in blue, your fellow law enforcement need you to show up for them and need backup, you come. You come to anybody who's in distress. CPD said that they did show up, but I don't know. it's been interesting. It's been pretty intense in Chicago. So along with this intensity, there's really been what I call an escalating war of words. And Pritzker has had all kinds of inflammatory rhetoric. Tammy Duckworth actually said that ICE agents were pulling people out of their homes. Civilians, citizens were being pulled out of their homes, stripped naked in the streets, Gestapo style. I've never seen that. I've never heard of that happening. But there's just been this escalation of of words and inflammatory rhetoric. And then now there's lawsuits. So there's lawsuits between Chicago and the federal government. There's lawsuits between Kwame Raoul, state leaders. I use that term leaders loosely, and the Trump administration. So there's lawsuits everywhere. And Illinois Governor J.B. Pritzker, of course, he has been leading this escalation, this escalating war on words, this rhetoric. He's been leading the anti-ICE messaging strategy among his fellow Democrats. He's gone so far as to say, like, we're exploring legal options to try to prosecute ICE agents for breaking the law, allegedly breaking the law. Don't know what law they're breaking. They're enforcing the law. But that's how far this guy has gone. He's looking into possibly prosecuting ICE agents. This is what he said with MSNBC host, now MSNBC host, former press secretary, Biden press secretary, Jen Psaki. And he said this on Thursday in an interview with her. We played clips from that. So we're looking at all of the options at a local level with county, state's attorneys, with attorneys general, and to go after ICE agents when they're breaking Illinois law and when they're breaking local law. This is what Pritzker said to Jen Psaki in an interview recently, okay, just this week. Pritzker gets on onto Fox News. Now, I've told you, Pritzker has come out and said some things that would make you think that he's a fiscal conservative. He says things like, I prefer to grow the economy. He says things like, I've balanced the budget, and the way I balance the budget is by growing the economy. You would think that he was a fiscal conservative. He is trying to portray himself as a pragmatic Midwestern Democrat candidate because he's trying to launch himself onto the national stage and polish up his national profile for 2028. He wants to run for president, I'm sure of it. And Jen Psaki, you know, she threw him all kinds of softballs. Okay. Now I think he's appearing on Brett Baer's show, Fox News. This is a right-leaning news outlet. And I think he's appearing on there because he's trying to polish up his national profile, seem more pragmatic. He's actually gone after Brandon Johnson as of lately. He says, I want to grow the economy. You know, I'm a fiscal conservative. You know, that's his MO here with Brandon Johnson going after him. He's been saying like, oh, I don't want a head tax. Okay, so there's a controversial head tax going on in Chicago where businesses would have to pay. I think it's like over $20 per person if you employ over 100 people. So a month. So $20 a month per employee. It's a head tax. And Pritzker has come out in very strong terms against Brandon Johnson. So they've kind of been pitted against each other. And I don't think it's, I think it's all political theater. I think it's by design. It's manufactured because JB is trying to polish up his national profile and appear more moderate than he actually is. But Fox News' Brett Baer, unlike Jen Psaki, did not throw him any kind of softballs. He pressed him on several issues, on violent crime in particular, and the homicides. And he brought the receipts. And the governor, J.B. Jellybean, was not very happy when Brett Baer brought the receipts to the table. Let's take a look. Here we go.
Well, they're doing everything by the book.
Why does Chicago have the highest murder rate of all the big cities?
Well, we are not in the top 30 in terms of our murder rate. Indeed,
the murder
our murder rate it has been cut in half over the last 4 years, and every year it's gone down by double digits. And if you look at all of the violent crime over the last four years,
here's a map.
They've all gone down.
Most U.S. cities, 17.47 per 100,000 population. Chicago is number one over Philadelphia, Houston, Dallas, San Antonio, Phoenix, Los Angeles, New York, and San Diego.
What I'm explaining to you
now,
is
you're
when
talking
you
about
want to
violent
fight crime,
crime,
look, you can pull statistics up.
No,
I can
these are
too.
Murders.
I'm explaining to you that our murder rate has been cut in half. And very importantly, Brett, and you got to hear this, very importantly, We've been doing the things that are necessary to bring crime down, right? We've invested in community violence interruption. We've invested in police. You know, they're doing everything by the book.
Why does Chicago have
community violence interruption? So what does he mean there? The peacekeepers. Oh, the same peacekeepers, the one that you took a picture with who wound up murdering people and was wanted in like four different states. Yeah, that initiative, the peacekeepers initiative that takes $200, pays ex-cons $200 a day, taxpayer money, to go out there in a little yellow vest and play guidance counselor. Yeah, that's what he means by crime intervention programs. And we funnel it through NGOs, nonprofit organizations that taxpayer dollars, and then they pay their ex-cons with it. Really, it's just buying votes and buying donations, because those executive directors at the tippity top of those nonprofit organizations turn around and donate to Democrat politicians. But in another segment on in this interview, Pritzker told on himself a little bit. He showed his true colors, okay? So he tried to pretend that he's not fanning the flames of this violent rhetoric. He's trying to pretend that he's not a reason why there have been murder attempts on ICE agents. And, you know, he's claimed that he knows all the wrongdoing that these ICE agents are doing, and allegedly committing crimes, right? He declares he knows exactly what these ICE agents are doing. He's fanning the flames of this violent rhetoric, which is leading to the vicious attacks on ICE agents, including Brighton Park. That woman, she brought a gun, rammed an ICE vehicle. She got shot, tragically. That sucks. He has fanned the flames up to this point where there's people going out there and being vigilantes. You know, they're saying, oh, but when you've got Pritzker saying, oh, there's crimes, the vigilantes, the anti-ICE people, these Antifa types, they go out there and they think that they're doing some sort of justice by attacking and even trying to murder ICE agents. So Brett Baer, he asked him if he'd be willing to go with ICE agents for one day and actually see what they do. You know, you think that they're committing all this wrongdoing. Why don't you sit in a truck, sit in an ICE truck, hang out with them for a day? But the prospective 2028 presidential candidate declined. He did not want to sit with ICE and see what they were actually doing. He goes, I can go to the streets of Chicago and see what they're doing. And he was shaking his head no the entire time. Check out this segment. He really shows his true colors right here.
Not something that we should be really talking about like that.
The thing that we're demonizing is when ICE agents aren't following protocols. They aren't acting like law enforcement should act. They're instead literally racially profiling. We've seen it. All you have to do is go online and look at some of the videos. Just to be clear, because I think many people that are listening maybe haven't seen that.
You don't
before.
Think you're painting with a broad brush of all the ICE agents that are doing their job.
No, we're saying that if you're an ICE agent and you do these things, we think you ought to be held accountable. And yet no one in Washington, no one above them, no supervisor, no inspector general is holding anybody accountable. There literally haven't been any suspensions or firings for the terrible things that they've done, literally grabbing people, tackling them when they're U.S. citizens and have done zero.
You've referred to ICE as Christy Noem's thugs. Would you be willing to do a ride along with ICE in Chicago to get a better understanding about what they do and what they deal with?
I can see what they do on the streets of Chicago.
And are there any ICE agents that are good?
Of course. The problem is, who's holding the bad ones accountable? Because the bad ones...
The bad ones. Okay. So what comes to mind for me is Kat Akabazale. She's an American citizen. She's actually running for Congress and she's in Illinois. She's just not even 100 pounds wet. Right. And I looked at the video and I thought to myself for a brief moment, I go, that kind of sucks. That fair of the ICE agents to throw her down like that? I could replay the clip. I'd have to find it. But Kat Akabazale, she got thrown down by an ICE officer. All he did was simply push her, okay? And she's not 100 pounds and she goes flying. And at first I laughed, but then I was like, is that too far? Then I thought to myself, absolutely not. You don't know what these people are carrying. There could be makeshift bombs. They were outside of a detention facility, and they were trying to, really, they were little insurrectionists, and they were trying to barge their way into this detention facility. And when you are law enforcement, you have to act as if everybody, if they're acting threatening like that, if they're trying to really trespass onto federal property like that, you know, break into this detention facility where there are illegal aliens, potentially very dangerous illegal aliens, it's probably for the best that she got pushed the way she did. She was going to hurt herself by barging into the detention facility. She was committing a crime, and you have to use sometimes, and I know this is going to be controversial, excessive force with people who are using excessive force. Okay, so she was trying to force her way into this detention facility, screaming in their faces and pushing people, and they've got a job to do. And, you know, if you are acting in a threatening way, coming after me, I am going to meet you with that same exact amount of force, if not a little more, to stop you from doing what you're doing. So, in other words, Pritzker, in that clip, that segment of the interview, he would rather be snuggled up comfortably in his safe place, and he'd rather wallow in this ignorance of these distorted social media clips that he's talking about. And to be honest with you, what social media clips? I just explained Kat Akabazale. That one was one that I would say rose my eyebrows. I go, whew, was that too excessive? But then I thought to myself, absolutely not. She was committing crimes. She was trespassing. She was aiding and abetting illegal immigrants. She was prohibiting ICE from doing their job, which is enforcing federal law. And these leftist agitators will post these clips, and they're distorted social media clips. They don't show you the context of which they got to that point. You know, you F around, you find out. Okay, they didn't show you the F around part. They just showed you the find out part. And he would rather stay comfortable and snuggled up in his little safe place and wallow in this ignorance that he's got and just watch his social media clips that are distorted and taken out of context, rather than go sit with ICE agents and actually and truly see what they do and see the facts. And there's a word that is coming to mind right now, and it reminds with Howard for Governor J.B. Pritzker. It's coward. Okay, that's cowardly. You would rather sit behind your screen and snuggle up in your cozy little pajamas. I don't know what he wears at night. a shower curtain, maybe. Sorry. I'm sorry. I shouldn't have said that. Yeah, he snuggles up. He watches his distorted social media clips instead of actually going out there and doing the brave thing, which would be to sit with our law enforcement, our ICE agents, and see what they have to deal with on a day-to-day basis. But then again, this is a guy who has is completely out of touch with reality. He has 24/7 paid security detail. He doesn't care, you know, about ICE agents being accosted or engaged. He doesn't care that, you know, a Kat Akabazale is sprinting into a detention facility or screaming in their faces. He doesn't have anything like that going on in his life because he has 24/7 paid security. And he literally boasts about Chicago being safe. You know, I will never forget him in the tactical gear, such political theater. And, you know, Jimmy Kimmel played the clip of him wearing the tactical gear, and they were being sarcastic. Oh, it's a war zone here. And he goes, you know, the hot dogs and the Chicago Cubs and blah, blah, blah. Such a gay video, such political theater. And he was, you know, walking around boasting how safe Chicago was on the day after Labor Day weekend. And Labor Day weekend, they saw 37 shootings over a three-day period. 58 people were shot. 8 people died as a result of being shot. So Pritzker, in another clip I'm going to play from this interview on Fox News he did with Bret Baier, he went full Jekyll and Hyde. Okay, like this guy used to compare Donald Trump to Hitler. Okay, and I want you to be aware, my listeners and viewers, they know. You guys are like typically 2-3 days ahead of the news cycle. I talked about how Governor J.B. Pritzker, watch what he does over the next couple of months. He is going to try to rebrand himself as the pragmatic Midwestern Democrat candidate. And he's going to fight with Brandon Johnson, the evil socialist. And he's going to look like a moderate. He's going to come out and say that he loves to grow the economy. And he might actually do a 360 when it comes to Donald Trump. And he's already starting to do it here. Look at this. Amazingly, this guy used to compare Donald Trump to Hitler. Okay. Hitler. And now all of a sudden, he's saying that Donald Trump actually fixed some problems now that he's been in the White House. And he actually helped Illinois with their influx of illegal immigrants under the Biden-Harris administration. Don't believe me? Take a listen to this. Here we go. Hold on. I got to pull this up. I want to make sure that you guys have it. Hold on. Here we go. I told you that this would happen.
I asked President Biden and wrote a very public letter to deal with some of the problems at the border. We were seeing, you know, tens of thousands of people being sent by Governor Abbott to Chicago, and we weren't getting any help really from the federal government. Here's what I would say. Since President Trump has taken office, we don't have the problem that existed before with people coming across the border. I asked President Biden and wrote a very...
Now, and I'm hesitant to say this. All right, I am very hesitant to say this. I've got to think if I want to. I think I'm going to. Pritzker, I've said it. He's going to try to pitch himself as a pragmatic, moderate Democrat candidate for 2028, the presidential run. Now, Darren Bailey, we talked about his family, the tragedy, his two little grandbabies. I'm going to start choking up even talking about it. It was just on my heart all day yesterday, and I was just deep in prayer, praying that God comfort them and surround them, wrap them up in his arms and remind them. That was my prayer yesterday. Please remind them that death isn't the end, and that they will see their grandbabies again, and that they will see Zach and Kelsey again. And I believe that this family is full of faith. They're devoted. They've got such deep conviction. They're so community service oriented. I mean, just an incredible family, right? Governor J.B. Pritzker, I watched the presser. I was waiting for him to release something, some sort of release. And he did on X. And then in a presser, he was asked about it. And I won't lie, I started to choke up. Okay. And Governor J.B. Pritzker, either it was real and authentic, or he was playing it up. And I mean, for a moment there, I was just like, wow, this guy is a leader. He shared a story about his grandmother losing a child. And he said, I couldn't imagine losing two grandbabies. And he said, he's never had to go through losing a child. He couldn't imagine what Darren Bailey is going through. And I really hope that it was genuine. But his actions in recent weeks, his actions within recent days, the coming out against Brandon Johnson's head tax, this guy is the same guy who's signed like 50 plus tax hikes into law. Okay. You're not against the head tax, dude. You have not met a tax that you don't like, Governor JB. And, you know, I hope that it was genuine, but I think that he's doing this thing in recent days and weeks where he's trying to pull conservatives, because I won't lie to you. He says that he's against the head tax. And I was like, hell yeah, go JB. This is the first time. And then I was like, oh, wait, no, he's manufacturing this. It's political theater. He's trying to launch himself as the pragmatic Midwestern candidate who's more moderate. Then you see him on Fox News and you're like, wait a second, he's on Fox News now? And then all of a sudden he says he provides a semi-decent moderate argument. He says, oh, there's good ICE agents, but there are bad ones, bad apples, and there needs to be accountability at the top for those bad apples in ICE. And, you know, that's sort of a moderate stance. If you did happen to see some of these distorted social media clips, for example, the Kat Akabazale one, you might have even thought, hey, yeah, there should be some accountability for our bad police officers or our bad ICE agents. And if you're more moderate, a J.B. Pritzker sounds pretty good within the last few days. And then you see this just heartfelt. And I pray that it's genuine. I'm going to hope that it's genuine. Condolences and the story that he shared about his grandmother and this in this presser and the sympathies, I hope that they were actually genuine. But knowing JB and what he's been doing in recent weeks, I don't know. You know, this is weird that all of a sudden you've got JB saying that Donald Trump actually did something good for Illinois. Okay, and he's thanking him on one hand, and then he's slapping him with the other, calling him Hitler. And that's why it's so hard for me to believe that JB was genuine in his, you know, condolences. I sure hope he was, and that it wasn't an act to try to, you know, play politics. And he's been trying to present himself as a moderate, nice guy. Okay. And he's not. He's a far leftist. And Illinois, we've got to do better in our future election cycles. I'll be voting for Darren Bailey. We've just got to do better in our future elections. We have to. All right. Let's get to Hakeem Jeffries. Smash that like button. Share this out with your friends. Good morning, Boiling Point Live. If you guys aren't following Boiling Point Live, go do it right now on Rumble. And I do want to get to some of your comments. He's worried about the bad ones. Yeah, the bad ICE agents, which, like I said, those ICE agents, I mean, there might be some distorted social media clips. When I first saw the clip of Kat Akabazale, I was like, she's not even 100 pounds soaking wet, and this gigantic ICE agent and all this tactical gear shoves her, and she goes flying. But then you look at the clips prior to that, and you're like, oh, wait, no. Kat Akabazale was engaging these ICE officers first. There were other protesters there with signs. They were taking the stakes of their signs and they were trying to hurt the ICE officers. Then you had them trying to storm the detention facility, prohibiting them from doing their job. They were throwing things at the ICE vehicles. You F around, you find out, right? And unfortunately, you will see the distorted social media clip or the clip taken out of context of the ICE agent pushing this 100-pound girl over. And you're going to look and be like, oh, there's some bad ICE agents out there. No. You didn't see everything that led up to that moment. And unfortunately, we have a governor who doesn't want to go see what these ICE agents deal with on a day-to-day basis, partially due to his inflammatory, violent rhetoric and his anti-ICE messaging. He doesn't want to go do a ride-along with these ICE agents. He would rather stay comfortable and watch the social media clips like a coward. He is a hypocrite. The Pritzkers have relocated their museums, including the military museum with a gun shop and open range. That's all in Wisconsin while Illinois abides by his tyrannical rulings. Yeah, I've heard about that. The Wisconsin range that's up there, the Pritzker family has, you know, he's outlawed every gun, essentially, like tons of so-called assault weapons. magazine clips. You can't have a certain amount of rounds here in the state of Illinois. It's insane. Yet the family has a gun shop and an open range in Wisconsin, and Illinois has to abide by all of the tyrannical rulings and the anti-Second Amendment BS. So yeah, he's a hypocrite. Like I said, he doesn't have to deal with what the ICE agents deal with on a day-to-day basis because he has 24/7 security. So let's get to Hakeem. I want to get to Hakeem. Now, Hakeem is proving that there is a full Democrat meltdown. It's in full swing right now. He issued a warning. Warning, warning, warning. Anyone who is providing financial assistance, private donations for the construction of President Donald Trump's grand ballroom at the White House, he's warning them that if they do that, they're going to be under investigation. Okay. So he was speaking on MSNBC, the House Minority Leader, and he said that the building of the ballroom is an example of what Trump has been doing since he's been sworn in for his second presidency, claiming that Trump is running the largest pay-to-play scheme in the history of the country without providing any proof. This is what he claimed on MSNBC. Like, pay-to-play. So they're trying to say that Donald Trump is a part of this pay-to-play scheme. And if you want favors, then you have to donate to my ballroom. Okay, he's trying to say that that's what's going on, and he doesn't provide any evidence. Democrats never do. Take a listen to him on MSNBC. Hold on, let me pull this up for you. Very important stuff. And then we're going to get into how other Democrat presidents in the past, they have made renovations to the White House. The media hysteria did not follow those buildings and constructions and the renovations. The media is absolutely hysterical over these renovations. Why? Orange man bad. Take a listen.
More likely, this is part of what Donald Trump has been doing since day one of his presidency, running the largest pay-to-play scheme in the history of the country, and probably soliciting donations from people who've got business before the United States government. And all of this is going to have to be investigated. It will. All of this will have to be uncovered. It will. And these people are going to be held accountable no matter how long it takes. That's going to be the reality of the situation. And that's our warning to all of these people participating in this scheming to manipulate taxpayer dollars and, of course, to destroy the people's house. The White House belongs to the American people. It doesn't belong to Donald Trump. More likely, this is part of what Donald Trump.
Okay. So that's Hakeem. Oh, Hakeem. Hakeem. Okay. So he says that they have probably been soliciting donations from people who've got business with the United States government. He's suggesting that there's some pay to play going on here and that they're all going to be investigated and it will be uncovered. It will. No receipts right now, no evidence. Oh, but it will. It will be uncovered. Okay. And Jeffries continues on MSNBC, and he said, and these people are going to be held accountable no matter how long it takes. Yeah, well, the way the Democrat Party is going right now, I think that is going to take you guys quite a long time to try to hold people accountable, which is really weaponize the government against your political opponents, which is what I foresee you doing over this, you know, taking these private donors and these construction people and putting them through the ringer for no reason and really weaponizing the government. But it's probably going to take you a long, long while because you guys are never going to win election again. And here's why. There's so much infighting going on, the identity politics. We've talked about this week. You guys can't get your stuff together. Okay. Get rid of the identity politics. It's fractioning your party. It's causing a bunch of friction. We actually just saw it. Hunter Biden came out and blasted Kamala Harris for her book, where she says that, yeah, I mean, I don't know. I thought something might have been going on with Joe Biden, i.e. medically, cognitively, right? But she didn't say anything, and Hunter Biden was blasting her for that. And then he said, we were good to her. My dad was good to her. He put her in at the vice presidency simply because she's Black, is essentially what Hunter Biden said in this interview that he did with a Substack writer. But the Democrat Party is so fractured, and there's so much infighting going on. I don't think foresee them really winning an election ever again, and winning big. Now, if they do, they would weaponize the government and hold people accountable. So pull all these private donors in who donated to the ballroom and put them through the ringer and scream at them and drum up all kinds of fraudulent charges, okay, against them. I could foresee that happening, but I think it's going to take a long, long while because Democrats aren't going to win. And he says, and that's a warning to all of these people participating in this scheming to manipulate tax dollars and, of course, destroy the people's house, which from what I understand, there hasn't been tax dollars. Now, correct me in the comment section. I've been following this pretty closely. I haven't seen tax dollars used for this ballroom. It seems to me like a bunch of private donations, which is out of the ordinary for presidents, and we'll go through prior renovations done to the White House. JFK, you have Teddy Roosevelt, you have Barack Obama recently, more recently, and they all use taxpayer dollars. Why? Because it's the government building, and you use government dollars for the government building. Donald Trump is like not using government dollars from what I understand, and now maybe that's changed. But from everything I've seen, it all looks like private donors to me. So the meltdown happening from Hakeem is interesting, but it's not just Hakeem. We've also got more leftist outrage, and I don't know why. Like, the Dems, they always pick up on these weird issues, and then they, like, blast them out there, and they, like, get all up in a hissy about it, and it's, like, all political theater, and it's weird. Like, why this, you know? I don't know why you guys are outraged about this thing. Democrat presidential nominee, former Democrat presidential nominee. God, that sounds great. She lost. Hillary Clinton. She made this really tone-deaf post, and she, of course, has gone on leftist talking head shows and cable news outlets, and they're all in a hysteria about this. And I guess Hillary Clinton, the talking heads, the leftist media, I guess that they don't know, so I've got to school them here on the Conservative Cat Show, about the numerous changes to the White House under prior presidents, Democrat presidents. Okay, they've made changes to the White House, renovations to the White House for centuries. Let's look at Hillary Clinton's tone-deaf post here. I've got the receipts. Here it is. She says, this is not his house. It's your house, and he's destroying it. Okay, so there's renovation going on, and there's a bulldozer, and they've knocked down part of some of the White House here. He says, okay, and the headline here is White House begins demolishing East Wing to build Trump ballroom. The president claimed construction of the $250 million ballroom would not interfere with the existing White House structure. So she shares this, and then she says, it's your house. You know, very tone-deaf post here. And I want to bring up how Democrats seem to have zero problem with Democrat presidents constructing construction projects to the White House, renovations to the White House. They're only against it when it's Donald Trump. Okay, they're only against Trump's renovations because Orange Man bad, it's Donald Trump. So altering the East Wing of the White House isn't destroying it. Okay, and I know that this looks, ooh, it's they're destroying it because there's a bulldozer there. I know it looks like it's destroyed, but I mean, it's going to be fixed, right? I mean, it's not destroying it. It's going to be rebuilt. Okay. So altering the East Wing of the White House is not destroying it. And there's historical precedents here, which, you know, is like it's obvious that this is idiotic and that this is an idiotic notion that, you know, you renovating something is destroying it. But it's been renovated in the past, the East Wing specifically, by former presidents. And the East Wing itself, I want to talk about this, started out as a small little entrance, okay? And it was like a place where you could hang your coat. Like, that was about it, okay? And under Teddy Roosevelt, in 1942, they added a bigger structure, okay? They expanded the entrance of the East Wing, and then they added a bigger structure, really to cover an underground bunker. And that's actually where the First Lady had her office. And where the First Lady has had her office, and presidents after Teddy Roosevelt, First Ladies have gone down there for their offices or for their office space. So adding space to accommodate people follows tradition. Okay, this has been done at the White House for centuries. I mean, this was done in 1942. They added a bigger space for the entrance, and it was like a big structure that would actually cover this underground bunker where the First Lady's office is, and the First Lady can accommodate people. And like I said, I'm pro the construction if it means you can have more people in the White House. I'm always pro that because it is the people's White House. If you're going to have a huge ballroom and you can host people, more people than you could before, that's a win, right? We want it big. Okay. So a Democrat, you know, her name is Maria Shriver. Okay. And she is the former First Lady of California. She is a NBC news journalist. And she happens to be the niece of JFK, President JFK. So I'm going to share with you what she threw out there on social media. And totally, like, tone deaf, all of these Democrats, they don't know what the hell they're talking about. And you would think that she would know about JFK's renovations prior to posting this, but whatever. She says, Maria Shriver says, "This breaks my heart. It infuriates me. Hundreds of millions of dollars to build a new ballroom. One, I think that it's millions of dollars, not of taxpayer dollars, but of private donations largely. If they are using some taxpayer dollars, I'll get to that. Barack Obama actually $300-something million to do White House renovations in taxpayer money. Okay. And from what I can tell, this is largely private dollars, if not all. And Maria Shriver here, she's like, good God. Okay. And she was like a former NBC news journalist. She was a former California, First Lady of California. And, you know, it breaks her heart. It infuriates her. And, you know, this shouldn't surprise you. Very quickly, somebody took to X and had the receipts. She's the niece of JFK. Okay, and they pulled the receipts and said, hey, actually, during JFK's administration, during his presidency, there were some White House renovations done. Journalist Selena Zitto was the one who shared the receipts with this leftist. And there was a huge TV interview done. There was, and maybe you guys, some of you watching might remember this, if you lived under JFK. You might have remembered some of this history. I didn't know JFK's renovations until reviewing these receipts that she provided. But there's actually a tour given by then First Lady Jackie Kennedy. And there was broadcast, there was print media, and they were fawning all over the new renovation. So this is a picture of Jackie Kennedy doing her broadcast interview. And then there's the blueprints of the, there's Jackie Kennedy with the blueprints of the renovations. This is an article clipping about the White House and the renovations being done under the Kennedy administration. There you go. Yeah, so like these were receipts that this journalist had provided Maria Shriver in response to her tweet here. And, you know, I feel like Maria should know this, right? Being the niece of JFK, you know, but I'll let you come up to it with an answer for that one. Why does she not know this, that JFK? I didn't, because I'm not particularly interested in White House renovation history. Okay, to be honest with you. But for sure, you know, legacy media knows this. They would do their due diligence. If I was going to do a story on Donald Trump's, I don't give a hoot, quite frankly, about the renovations to the ballroom. I think that there's much more pressing things to talk about, which is why this story is so odd and it's blown up. And I'm like, okay, I've talked about this before. It's largely private donations. The only reason why people would be outraged about this would be the taxpayer dollars being used. But even prior presidents have used taxpayer dollars for renovations. I'll get to that here in just a second. But surely the legacy media knows, right? But like that knows that this isn't out of the ordinary, you know, especially if they've covered in some of these legacy media types, there's, you know, ancient people in legacy media. Surely, you know, you'd cover, you know, prior presidencies, Democrats in the Oval Office, actually in most recent years, Barack Obama. And I'll get to that here. Like, surely you've covered that before and you know that this is pretty ordinary stuff, what Donald Trump is doing with the ballroom. Now, I want you to check this out. This is fascinating. Barack Obama, here's the total, $376 million of taxpayers' money, okay, to renovate the White House in 2010. And this is like a panel, I guess, of three MSNBC hosts or some, you know, MSNBC hosts where they were doing reports and they were smiling about the renovations. In fact, I would say almost giddy about the renovations that Barack Obama was doing at the time in 2010. $376 million of taxpayer money. Like, if you want to be outraged about something, why not that? Donald Trump is doing 250. That's not nearly 376. It's almost double of what Donald Trump is doing with the ballroom and renovations. And it's taxpayer money. I think largely Donald Trump is gathering private donations. Take a listen. Here we go.
Sounds like you're building another wing to the White House, but we appreciate you keeping
you
your focus.
I can't even imagine, TJ. It's going to happen for the next 2 years. All of the banging, the jackhammering, the dust, the confusion, the noise of all places to do construction is happening right here, the front lawn of the White House.
It's a four-year renovation project. Estimated cost, $376 million.
Sounds like you're building another wing to the White House, but we appreciate you keeping your focus.
You can't even imagine. It's going to be 2 years of renovations, and it's $376 million. And this was all back in 2010, okay? So we've got the receipts of then-President Barack Obama spending taxpayer money to renovate the White House. And I'm not even all that pissed about it, right? Because I don't really care one way or another. Now, the taxpayer dollars versus private dollars would be nice if he would have done it privately and done it like Donald Trump is doing it, right? But look at the bulldozer, okay? Like, there's a bulldozer. Just like Donald Trump has, he's knocking down part of the East Wing to build this big ballroom to host more people. I think that we can all kind of agree that more people in the White House, good thing. So the mood isn't sad or pissed or down in those CNN studios or that CNN reporter out in the field who had the hard hat on. You know, it almost looked like they were having a little party or they were almost giddy about the renovations. Okay. So this only leads us to one reasonable conclusion, my dear friends. The left complaining and fear-mongering, really, over this particular renovation of the People's House is only because it's Donald Trump. There, that's it. That's the only conclusion we can come up to, is that they hate Donald Trump so much, and their fear-mongering and complaining is just because Orange Man bad. They have no leg to stand on. And when their party's presidents, you know, JFK, Barack Obama, when they do the construction and the American people are actually the ones paying for it, they say nothing, absolute crickets. So their hypocrisy knows no depths, once again. And I'm not sure, like I said, why this is even an issue. This is clearly political theater. I don't know what the hell the Democrats are working on in a smoke-filled room in the back somewhere. But usually when there's things like this, where they're all up in arms about a ballroom, when there's this fabricated outrage, there's something else going on. I haven't been able to find it quite yet. Maybe to distract from the Schumer shutdown and it being their fault. I don't know. But this is completely dominated. This has dominated the news cycle for the last 2-3 days. And I've been so annoyed by it. And I was like, fine, I'll freaking address it today on the Conservative Cat Show, you idiots. But White House Press Secretary Caroline Leavitt, bless her heart, she had to deal with question after question after question about the dam construction, the ongoing construction. And apparently there's nothing more important to talk about at the White House. One reporter, and I'll share this with you, she claimed that Trump, or this reporter was claiming that Trump was doing something nefarious, or suggested that Trump was doing something nefarious with the construction. And, you know, this question alone, I think, proves that these journalists need to touch grass. They need to, I don't know, maybe hang out with people who build and work with their hands. I know that they don't. They like to hang out with their oat milk, matcha latte sipping, yoga, Pilates, lucky ducky babies. Okay, I know that they don't hang out with people who build and work with their hands and create a product or provide a service. I know that they don't like to hang out with those types of people. They'd prefer to hang out with the public sector elites. But this reporter, she repeated the claim that Hakeem Jeffries earlier talked about, that Trump is doing something nefarious. Okay, prove it. Give me the receipts, man. Take a listen. This was Caroline Leavitt shutting down that reporter, by the way. Here we go.
Project. And the president, yes, has committed his own resources. And when he releases that information, which I'm very confident he will, you will all see that.
We'll see a dollar figure from the president.
Yes, you will. And I would also just add, the president has been incredibly transparent. I would reject any notion otherwise when it comes to this ballroom project. It's something he personally has obviously taken an interest into and has talked with all of you in this room many times about. You have seen the model in the Oval Office. Last night he showed that for you. But when this plan was presented and when these renderings, as soon as they were complete, the president directed me to come out here and to share them with all of you. I did an entire opening remarks about what this ballroom project was going to look like. With any construction project, there are changes over time as you assess what the project is going to look like. And we'll continue to keep you apprised of all of those changes. But just trust the process. This is going to be a magnificent addition to the White House for many years to come. And it's not costing the taxpayers anything. The president is privately funding this ballroom addition to the White House grounds. Jennifer.
To follow up on that, one thing that's not in the president's model is the East Wing bunker, the president's emergency operations center. Can you say if his update, that $300 million, does that include the cost for upgrading that bunker?
Look, like any security enhancements that are made on the White House grounds, those will be made and maintained by United States Secret Service. As for the cost of the ballroom and the construction itself, all of that is going to be, like I've said, privately funded and paid for by the president himself and many generous patriots who have stepped up.
Included in that funding.
Correct.
Okay. And then can you say, well, that's right. I'll skip that one.
Thanks. We just.
Thank you, Caroline.
Okay.
So the White House has explained that the reason you didn't submit construction plans to the NCPC is because that commission, along with others, don't have oversight over demolitions, but only over construction. and so far you haven't built anything. So can you help us understand, can the president tear down anything he wants without oversight? Could he demolish this building or say the Jefferson Memorial?
So it's not the president who came up with that legal opinion himself. That's a legal opinion that's been held by the NCPC for many years. It's written, so we can get you that background and that research if you wish to include it in your reporting, because it is very important. They have ruled consistently, their general counsel has said, when it comes to phase one of this project, the tearing down of the current East Wing structure, a submission is not required legally for that. Only for vertical construction will a submission be required, and that's a legal opinion from them, and we are following that legal opinion. And again, I would just add, can any president do such a thing to the White House grounds? There have been many presidents in the past who have made their mark on this beautiful White House complex. This briefing room, as you all know, was not once a briefing room. It was a swimming pool. There have been presidents who have completely torn down the executive mansion. If you look at what President Truman did, some of the photos of the construction project that took place in those years. I think sitting here today, we're all grateful for those efforts and the modifications that happened at that time. And again, in due time, the East Wing is going to be more beautiful and modern than ever before. And in addition, there will be a big, beautiful ballroom that can hold big parties and state visits for generations to come.
So it sounds like the answer is yes, he can tear down whatever he wants. And then secondly,
that's not what we're saying. That's a legal opinion that's been held for many years.
And interpreting it.
No, it's something that President.
My God. Okay, so he can tear down anything he wants. Yeah. Okay. So she says the NCPC, this is the National Capital Planning Commission, has ruled that when it comes to tearing things down, like the East Wing currently, it's being torn down. Big old bulldozer, big old claw, right? Submission isn't required. You don't have to tell them that you're doing it. Okay. Only vertical construction. So when you're actually building, there will be a submission required. That is a legal opinion we're following. That is what Caroline Leavitt said, and shut her down. And they're trying to make it sound like President Donald Trump is coming in there with a bulldozer and destroying the people's house, and he's not going to rebuild it, okay, and build this ballroom. They're acting like, oh, he's just tearing it all down. People are insane. Do they not know? And they don't, okay? These media elitists, these journalists, like I said, they don't hang out with people who actually build and work on things and work with their hands. They just hang out with their oat milk latte sipping, yoga doing public sector hacks. So they don't understand that, hey, yeah, demolition is kind of required before construction. These liberals, you know, they continue to make horses rear ends of themselves, okay? And I can't help but think, that whole time that reporter was talking to Caroline Leavitt, I was thinking to myself, my God, these are the same people who are so eager to rip down and destroy historical statues and rename state parks across the country. And they've been tearing down statues of the white supremacists over the last few years. And now all of a sudden they're like, oh, we have to preserve our historical White House. We have to preserve it. You people are... All right. I have to switch gears here, but I'm going to take a quick break. Smash that like button, share this out with your friends. Things are pretty good when the worst thing you can do. Yes, Robert. The worst thing that's going on is Donald J. Trump's construction. Yeah, things must be pretty good when this is like what you're talking about. I mean, there's got to be more pressing issues, right? Talk about the crime. Talk about Chicago crime. I don't know. Talk about the trade. You know, actually, Donald Trump, and this is kind of controversial, some libertarian or, I don't know, some Republican conservative folks, and maybe we'll get to it today, Argentina, he wants to shift a lot of, Donald Trump wants to shift a lot of our imports coming in from adversaries like China, okay, or Brazil, beef, okay, he wants to stop doing business with those folks and start doing business with Argentina. it's a little controversial. I feel like that would have been a better issue to talk about or to press Caroline Leavitt on. Okay. I don't know why this is taking center stage, but I've got to take a quick break. Hypocrisy. Yeah. Democrazy. Yeah. I call them demon rats, demo rats, demon rats. Can Pritzker Lori Lightfoot tear down statues in Chicago, i.e. Christopher Columbus? Yeah, exactly. They tear down Christopher Columbus statues. I was actually just in Texas last week. We went up there for the Formula One Grand Prix, the U.S. Grand Prix. It was so fun. My guy won, Max Verstappen. Whoop, whoop. They're going to be in Mexico this week for the race. But I went to the state capitol, and I'm surprised they haven't torn it down yet. It's kind of like a tribute to the Confederacy right outside the Texas state capitol. And I took a picture of it. I'm like, I have to keep this because it's probably not going to be here in the coming years because the leftists tear down all these statues. So it's like a memorial for those who died in those who were in the Confederacy who died during the Civil War. And I don't think that it's going to be there in the coming years because they just tear down stuff. And I don't know why all of a sudden these people are up in arms about Donald Trump tearing down the East Wing, even if he were to be tearing it down and never rebuilding it or building the ballroom. And he had no plans to do that. like, you guys love tearing down stuff. All right, I got to take a quick break, but we're just a couple of weeks from the election day, from election day in Virginia, and the Democrat Party shenanigans are right on cue. They are talking about redistricting, okay? So they have launched a last-minute redistricting session, and really what they're attempting to do here is sideline Winsome Sears. And get it to where she can't campaign. She's a lieutenant governor. I'll get into the details coming up next. Don't want to miss a second of the show. This is Conservative Cat. Welcome to Conservative Cat Clips, where we deal with the truth, not talking points. I'm your host, Cat, and today we're putting a spotlight on something the abortion industry wants to keep you in the dark about: abortion pills. What are they? How do they work? And how are they hurting women? Let's talk about the facts. Over 54% of abortions in America are now done using chemical abortion pills. That number is climbing fast. Why? Because it's easier, it's cheaper, and it's quieter. But here's what they won't tell you. Abortion pills come with a serious risk. The process is two drugs: mifepristone, which actually ends the pregnancy, and misoprostol, which forces the body to expel the baby. Sounds simple, right? It's not. According to the FDA, 4,200 serious adverse events have been reported, including 28 deaths since 2000, the year 2000. And those are just the official numbers. In 2021, there was a peer-reviewed study that found that ER visits after chemical abortions increased by over 500% between 2000 and 2015. And here's the kicker. Many of these cases are coded as miscarriages. And they're coded as miscarriages because women don't or they can't tell the hospital what actually happened and that they actually took these pills. That means the real damage, probably much worse. So way more than 4,200 adverse events since 2000. Now brace yourself. The Biden administration made it to where these pills were accessible by the mail with no person exam, no ultrasound, and no guarantee that the pregnancy had to be an ectopic pregnancy. So, I mean, you could be taking these in your 6 months, 7 months, 8 months along. And it's not, this could be deadly if you take it when it's not an ectopic pregnancy. Women are being told to take these powerful drugs and there's zero medical supervision. That's not healthcare. It's called negligence. It's medical negligence. And we're seeing heartbreaking stories about all these women who are bleeding alone in dorm rooms, bathrooms, parking lots, or even in their own cars in the parking lot. Clinics like Planned Parenthood calls this empowerment and empowering. But tell me how it's empowering to hand a teenager a handful of pills and say, good luck. The emotional fallout is just as real, by the way. There's a physical risk, but there's an emotional risk as well. Women reported feeling abandoned, traumatized, and even haunted by what they've done, especially when they see the tiny, tiny body of their baby passing. And passing that, it's traumatizing. And nobody tells them that they're going to see the tiny baby in the pamphlet. So here's the truth, the plain and simple truth. Abortion pills are not safe. They're not kind and they're not empowering. They actually hurt women and they silence their pain by taking these chemical abortion pills, and they protect an industry by keeping the abortion in the dark. And it doesn't do anything to protect the individual at all. I'm Kat, and this has been Conservative Clips, Kat Clips, reminding you that real healthcare, it doesn't kill people. And real healthcare means empowering women and supporting women, not selling them lies in a bottle. Stay alert, stay bold, and always choose life. This has been Conservative Kat Clips. Hey, go ahead and smash that like button. Share this out with your friends. Subscribe to the channel. And as always, support the program by visiting patriotpumpenergy.com, buying your bottle of premium pre-workout today. $10 off at checkout if you use... It's a premium promo code. It's the best promo code out there. You guys are the only ones who get it. Promo code Conservative Kat. You get that $10 off Conservative Kat. Kat is with a C. Patriot Pump Energy. This is our fruit punch flavor. Very good stuff. It's got L-citrulline. It's got creatine. It's got black pepper extract. A lot of this stuff works together to provide you that long-lasting focus that you just don't get in a name-brand energy drink, because what they do, they try to give you a little sugar high and load you up with caffeine, and it's not long-lasting. You crash. This is a great alternative to the energy drinks you see on the shelves. Okay, so let's get to Winsome Earl Sears, because they are attacking her really with this last minute redistricting push in Virginia. So you guys know Virginia election is in a couple of weeks, and the Democrat Party, their shenanigans are right on cue. Now, it's bad enough that this party of far leftists in Virginia, they have refused to force Jay Jones, this reckless driver. We covered that couple days ago, 116 miles per hour in a 70 mile per hour zone. He had to complete 1,000 hours of community service. Kind of bizarre how he was able to complete that. He did community service with his own pack, which I don't even know why that was allowed. But apparently he did 500 hours with his pack and 500 hours with the NAACP there locally. And there's a special prosecutor to check into whether or not he actually completed that, because how did you work your full-time job and also do 20 hours a week, because he completed it within a year. So there's a special prosecutor looking into the details of his community service hours for the reckless driving. And he kind of got, comparatively to other people who have been caught speeding at much lower speeds than 116 miles per hour, he got a slap on the wrist. Most people are jailed. Most people have to pay more in fines. He only paid like $1,500 or something like that. So he's the attorney general nominee on the Democrat side. And then there's the incumbent, Jason. Now, the far left, they have not forced Jay Jones off the ticket following a scandal, revolting text messages where he fantasized about the violent deaths of his Republican rival and his rival's children. And, you know, he dreamt of his rival's, his political opponent's children dying, cradled, dying in his rival's arms, his political opponent's wife's arms. So cradling her dead children. That's what he dreamt of. And he admitted that over a text message in 2022. So he hasn't been forced out of the race by his own party. I don't know why. That's pretty revolting stuff right there. And that should disqualify you. And your party should oust you from running as attorney general amidst those texts. But they didn't. And why should they, when their own gubernatorial candidate Abigail Spanberger, who's running against Winsome Earl Sears, repeatedly urges her followers to let their rage fuel them. You know, and really, hate and chaos is the whole point of the Democrat Party. Stop me in the comment section if you disagree. Hate and chaos is the whole point of the Democrat Party. And of course, they're not going to oust Jay Jones from the attorney general race because it was hateful. Good. Is it chaotic? Good. 116 miles per hour in a 70 mile per hour zone and allegedly completing 1,000 hours of community service. Chaos. Good. If it's hateful, if it's chaotic, Democrat Party loves it. So they are, this party in Virginia is bathing in the filth left by the disgusting Jay Jones. And as that is going on, it now comes out that the Democrats are calling for a last minute special session. Okay. And it is a Democrat controlled House of Delegates. Okay. So they call them delegates there in Illinois. We have House of Representatives. It is a Democrat controlled House in the state of Virginia. Okay. And they want to redraw the congressional districts. Okay, so we have the same thing here in the state of Illinois. We redraw our districts all the time. We only have three Republican congressional districts, and we probably won't even have those three. Is it three? I think it's three. Yeah, Mary Miller, Mike Bost, and Darren LaHood. That's it. So we only have three Republican-drawn districts. We are the most gerrymandered state in the nation, Illinois. But they, the House of Delegates, they're in charge of redistricting, okay, and drawing the maps, the congressional districts. Okay, now they are holding a special session, and that is to convene on Monday, okay, next week. And the goal is to finalize the redistricting plans before the November 4th election. So Speaker of the House, Virginia House of Delegates, Don Scott, put the call out there yesterday afternoon. He said that, hey, we're going to do a special session and we're going to redraw the maps. Okay. Let me share with you the tweet here. So that way you've got your receipts from Don Scott. Here we go. Okay. So this is his call for the special session. I'll leave that up there for a little bit. Okay. The Speaker of the House, he put that call out there for the special session. So there is a rush now to redraw the state's congressional map. And really what this rush is to do, or what it's designed to do, is to secure additional Democrat seats ahead of the 2026 midterms. Okay. So they want to counter the redistricting efforts probably in Texas. Where we might even see this happen in Illinois. I know, right? Wait a second, Kat. You just told us that there were only three Republican seats. Yeah, I'm aware. I would not be surprised if Illinois called the special session, redesigned the map, or redistrict the maps to draw out the few Republicans that we do have in this state. Although it's like, it's pretty close to damn half, okay, of the electorate here in the state of Illinois is Republican, okay, but yet we only have three Republicans representing us at a federal level, which is just sad. So this, you're going to see Democrat states, you're going to see this happening. California is doing the same thing. And what this is, it's an attempt to combat the redistricting efforts in places like Texas. There's actually redistricting efforts in Missouri, red states, North Carolina, which is sort of blue, kind of purple. But there's redistricting efforts going on in red states. And you're going to see blue states start to counter those redistricting efforts. Okay, so that's what's going on here in Virginia. Okay, currently the congressional delegation in Virginia is made up of 6 Democrats and 5 Republicans, which is pretty compared to us, right? Like, I think it's 9. I don't know how many Democrats there are. There's a ton of Democrat congressmen and women in the state of Illinois. And we only have 3 Republicans, Mary Miller, Mike Vost, and Darren LaHood. Okay, this seems pretty like fair to me. Okay, but 2 districts of the 5 Republican seats are most likely going to be redrawn. And those are the districts of Representative Rob Whitman and Jen Kiggins. Okay, so they're going to redraw 2 of the 5 Republican districts in the state of Virginia. Okay. Are we all caught up? Attorney General Jason Mraz, I always have a hard time with his name. Jason, the Attorney General, the incumbent Attorney General, blasted the Democrats and said, hey, Virginia voters should be able to pick their elected officials, not politicians picking their voters. Yes. So let's pull up his ex post. This was a text message, and I'll let you see, or I'll let you review that. I'll keep that up there for a little bit. Oh, sorry. I don't know if I showed you. Maybe I didn't share this. This was the call. I want to make sure that I've got my receipts up for you. This is the call for the special session. And then this is the text message, the statement from Jason blasting the Democrats, saying that, hey, Virginia voters should get to pick their elected officials. It shouldn't be politicians picking their voters by redrawing and gerrymandering. Okay, now here's the kicker in all of this. Like, yes, okay, they're trying to secure more seats in the 2026 midterms, but how is this going to affect Winsome Sears? Here's the kicker, and this is a very nasty consequence. It's insidious. It's dirty. There's a consequence to this rush to call special session. So she is the current lieutenant governor. Okay, Winsome Sears. Let me take a sip of my water here just a second. Okay, good. My chops, they're hurting. I got this actually at Walmart for $4, and I was like, this is a really cute mug, isn't it? I know I'm kind of girly. Most people are like, oh, you're a tomboy. And I go, yeah, but I definitely like my girly mugs. This has like flowers all over it, and I'm obsessed. It only cost me $4, and it's a cute little mason jar with a handle. How rustic. So I want to talk about Winsome Sears and the consequence here of the redistricting, okay? Because on its surface, you know what they're doing. They're trying to counter Texas's redistricting. But you look into the nitty-gritty of this, and there's something really gross here. It's a gross consequence of this rush to call the special session. Winsome Sears, she is the current lieutenant governor. She is lieutenant governor to a Republican. She is running as the Republican gubernatorial candidate now. So she's lieutenant governor right now, and she's running to be the governor. Okay. Glenn Youngkin not going for it this go around. Winsome Sears going for the Republican, is at the top of the Republican ticket. Okay. For their election, coming up November 4th. Okay. A couple of weeks away, November 4th. Now, she's going to have to cease campaigning while there's a special session taking place. Okay, so I think that there's a rule, because she is the lieutenant governor currently, that she has to cease campaigning. And she's not going to be able to fundraise during this time. I think it's like a campaign finance rule that Virginia has. Okay, so she's not going to be able to fundraise during this time, special session. And there's no real talk of how long this session could last, of course. Okay, so we're a couple of weeks away where campaigning is necessary. Fundraising is necessary. So Winsome Sears The campaign called this special session exactly what it is. It's a desperate political stunt, saying that the Democrats are trying to force her off the campaign trail. The same politicians who marched in the No King protest, this is from the campaign, said in a campaign release, the Winsome Sears campaign, they said, the same politicians who marched in the No Kings protest are now trying to crown themselves as rulers of Virginia politics, abusing their offices to rig the calendar year or the calendar because they can't win on ideas. So they're trying to play with the calendar here because they can't win on their ideas. So that is a statement from the Winsome Sears campaign. They said that they're abusing their power, and it's hypocritical of them because they were just in the No Kings protest, and now they're trying to crown themselves rulers of Virginia politics, abusing their offices to rig the calendar because they can't win on their own ideas. Peyton Vogel, she's a spokesperson for the Winsome Sears campaign. She commented and she said, this is what panic looks like. With just 12 days until the election day, Abigail Spanberger and her Democrat allies have given up talking to voters about real ideas and solutions. Instead, she's leading the charge on cheap political stunts to slow down Winsome Earl Sears and her momentum. It's pathetic. Voters see right through it. They know Winsome Sears is a Marine, a mom, a fighter for Virginia every day, while Abigail Spanberger is a career politician using Washington-style dirty tricks to protect her power and her friends. Fascinating stuff here, folks. Okay, so now there's a guy in Virginia. His name is Christian Haynes, and he's a keen observer of Virginia politics. And I follow him on X. It's pretty good. He laid things out how it might go. And I'll give you my explanation, and then I'll give you his explanation here on X. And he kind of has the plan laid out very simply here. I'll throw that up there. But first, I'm going to get kind of give you my idea of how this setup is going to play out and what exactly is going on. So in Virginia, Democrats are reportedly trying to repeal a bipartisan redistricting commission, okay, that voters approved back in 2020. They're doing the same thing in California. They're trying to redo these commissions. And what they're really trying to do is counter what Texas has done, what other states, red states, have done as far as redistricting. And the commission was designed to take map drawing power away from politicians. Okay, that commission was really supposed to be designed to where we give a balance. There's a balanced panel of Republicans, Democrats, and independent citizens. And the goal was fair maps, not rigged ones. Okay. So they have to repeal that commission in order to redistrict and redistrict the way they want. Like I said, they want to redistrict two of the five Republican congressional districts. Democrats want to scrap that system right before the election and replace it with something that gives those politicians control over the maps again. Okay, so step one would be days before the November election, Democrats pass a repeal of the redistricting commission. Okay, that's sneaky timing. The public is distracted by all the campaign noise, by the election, and they're going to pass this repeal, and there's not going to be good debate and public input, and they're going to pass this like at the worst time. Okay, the timing is sneaky. The repeal of the commission. Step two, they're going to hope voters don't notice or punish them at the ballot box, because this could come back to bite them in the ass. Because they're doing this and they're calling a special session, people might be kind of pissed that they're trying to repeal a commission that they approved in 2020. The voters approved back in 2020 because, hey, this bipartisan redistricting commission, it actually took power away from the politicians. We like that. We wanted that back in 20. And now you're trying to take it away. Voters might be pissed and they might punish them at the ballot box. I know if I was a Virginian, I would punish my politicians at the ballot box who were pro repealing this redistricting commission. So they're going to hope that voters don't notice. They're going to hope that the buzz of the campaign noise is loud enough. And they're going to hope that they don't punish them at the ballot box. And this actually comes back to bite them in the ass because they need to hold on to a majority. Like I said, the House is Democrat controlled. They need to hold on to that majority in order to do redistricting, okay, the Democrats, and in order to help the Democrats in 2026 midterms. Step three, if, this is a big if, like I said, Democrats keep control of the legislature, they'll come back in January and pass the same repeal again, because that is something that has to happen. Why twice? Because Virginia law says constitutional amendments must be passed in two separate sessions with a general election in between them. Okay, so there will be a general election in 2025. Yeah, it's going to fulfill. Yeah, it's going to fulfill the requirements to get a constitutional amendment passed. Okay, so they are going to pass it in this session, this special session, and then they're going to pass it in a separate session that happens in January. They have to pass it twice. There's Virginia law that says that they have to do that. Okay, step four is going to be that they have to schedule a statewide referendum in 2026. Okay, a vote for the people to ratify their appeal. So they have to pass the repeal twice, and then they have to get a state referendum on the ballot in the 2026 election to ask voters to ratify their repeal. By that time, they plan to mobilize liberal voters in Northern Virginia, like Save Our Democracy, okay? And they're going to get this passed because they're going to mobilize these liberal voters, particularly in North Virginia. So it's kind of similar to Illinois politics in that the northern part of the state is more liberal and the southern part of the state is more conservative. Okay, they're going to mobilize these liberal voters and they're going to do a push, nonprofit organizations, they're going to push for that statewide referendum to be passed, and they're going to get people out to vote. And they're going to use these stupid little gay-ass slogans like Save Our Democracy, Vote Yes, right? They're going to scare suburban voters into showing up to protect Democrat power. That's what they're going to do. Okay, that's step four of their plan. Step five. Once that referendum passes in 2026, they'll call a special session and gerrymander the new maps, meaning they'll redraw voting districts to lock Democrat control for years. Okay, congressional seats, state house seats, everything. Okay, so once that referendum passes, they're going to call another special session and they're going to gerrymander new maps, not just for congressional seats, but also for state house seats. And they're going to try to lock in Democrat control by redrawing. So what does this really mean? This is the political version of saying, we don't like losing under fair rules, so we have to change the rules. That is what Virginia is doing right now. The bipartisan commission probably wasn't perfect, but at least it gave both parties and voters a seat at the table. Ending it puts redistricting back in the hands of politicians and the very people who stand to benefit. Okay. And in short, that's not about democracy. It's about power. And it's all being done quietly, strategically, just before voters get a chance to notice. So if Republicans tried this playbook, and really why the whole redistricting thing in Texas even happened was because of the illegal immigrants being counted in the census. I was just down in Texas. I'm telling you, so many Mexican people, whether they're citizens or not, I don't know. But I can tell you one thing right now, that being a border state, there was an influx under the Biden administration of illegal immigrants. And they really wanted to make sure that their maps reflected the citizenry correctly, okay, because Texas, they were counting illegal immigrants in the census, okay, and you can't do that, and it, you know, is sort of the census is used when redistricting. That's why Texas did what they did. If Republicans tried something like what Virginia is doing right now, the media would scream coup. And when Democrats do it, they say it's saving democracy. Okay. And this is the new normal, you know, where bipartisan means until it stops favoring us. Okay. They created a bipartisan commission. And now that it's not favoring them and that it's pretty down the middle, like I said, it's like five Republican seats and six Democrat seats that they've got their congressional seats. It's not really favoring them too much. They are screaming and they're saying, you know, down with this bipartisan commission. And fair maps to Democrats means control forever. Their idea of a fair map would be let's lock in our control forever. That's fascism. Okay. The left isn't trying to fix it. They're trying to own it. And you know, Virginia is really their test run. And I guarantee that if Virginia is successful with this, that they're going to do it in other states as well. So I wanted to pull up Christian Haynes here. He follows Virginia politics and he kind of laid out a plan. And I laid out my step 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, what I think their plan is. This is what he says the plan is, which is very similar to my idea of what they're going to be doing. He says, pass a repeal of a constitutional amendment, setting up a bipartisan redistricting commission literally days before the November election. So they have to pass the repeal of the bipartisan commission that they currently have. Pray that that doesn't result in backlash and that the voters don't notice, you know, because they need that House of Delegates to be Democrat controlled. And if there's backlash at the ballot box, then they're not going to be able to pass the repeal in January when they go back for another session. If Democrats win in 2 weeks, okay, so they keep their Democrat control in the House of Delegates, return in January, they pass the same bill a second time, fulfilling the constitutional requirement to pass an amendment twice, with a general election held in between both actions by the General Assembly. There's a requirement there that they have to fulfill. Incorporate in the amendment to repeal a statewide referendum. So they're probably going to squeeze this together, the repeal and the statewide referendum. And the statewide referendum will appear on the spring of 2026 ballot, okay, in time for the midterms, okay, so they can pass it, that referendum, spring 2026, and then November 2026, those are the real midterm, or that's the midterms, you know, not the primary. They're going to try to get it on this spring 2026 ballot, this referendum, which, by the way, is a off election, okay, spring of 2026. So they're going to mobilize their blue liberals in Northern Virginia with the slogans of save our democracy, yada, yada, yada. And they're going to try to turn out as much as they can to win that referendum in spring of 2026. And it won't take much because voter turnout is lower in the spring than it is in the fall when there's not, you know, big, it's not as big as race, okay? Especially, this isn't a presidential election, okay? So it's already going to be low voter turnout because it's a midterm election anyway, and in the spring of 26, that's the primaries. That's going to be very low turnout, so it's going to be pretty easy for the mobilized blue liberals to turn out and win the referendum, okay? And then they're going to call a special session to gerrymander the congressional and possibly even the state legislative maps before the summer primary. So there's a summer primary. And that there's only two possible ways to stop this. And one of those is going to pass on November 4th. So there's only a couple of ways to stop this. And the way to do it, really, I think you got to stop them on November 4th and vote out the Democrats in the House of Delegates and take their control away in the House. Okay, so as noted by Haynes, the redistricting effort faces procedural hurdles. Okay, the constitutional amendment requires two separate legislative sessions. And then they've got to pass the referendum. So I would say the first stop to stop this thing in its tracks would be to vote out the House delegate Dems on November 4th in a couple of weeks. That would be the first stop. The second would be in the spring of 2026 when that referendum, that statewide referendum, comes around, and to shut that down real quick. So this all kind of hinges right now on Democrats holding or increasing their narrow majority in the state legislature. So this is really hinging on that. And I think that in a couple of weeks, Virginians, if there's Virginians listening, or if you know somebody who lives in Virginia, tell them to vote out the House delegate Dems. They have to. Otherwise, they're going to have a hurdle, you know, come spring 2026 with that referendum. They're going to have to vote that down. But like I said, voter turnout things, they're going to have an uphill battle there with voting that referendum down, especially if those liberals are mobilized with stupid little slogans like Save Our Democracy or whatever the hell they come up with. Yeah, that's Virginia. Really sneaky, tricky stuff that they're doing. Very fascist type stuff, tyrannical type stuff. Surprise, surprise. This is their last, and really the consequence to this would be, or an unfortunate consequence of this, is that Lieutenant Governor Winsom Sears, she can't campaign while they're in special session because she's the current Lieutenant Governor. And I think there's a rule as far as campaign finance, she can't collect finances during that time. So, yeah, I don't know if there's a rule or whether or not, whether she's in special session, it's going to be hard because she's a Lieutenant Governor. She's got to be there. So it's an effort to try to get her off of the campaign trail. All right. Smash that like button. Share this out with your friends. Subscribe to the channel. No one is above the law, except for Democrats, of course. This liar needs to join the list of Illinois governors that have done prison time, and soon, worst governor in history of this now cesspool state. Yeah. Yeah, so Abigail Spanberger, you know, I think that it's disgusting that she didn't say, hey, Jay Jones, you have to step out. She was in a debate with Winsome Sears, and she didn't say, hey, Jay Jones, you need to get out of the race. Nobody in the Democrat Party in Virginia had said, hey, Jay Jones, you need to get out of the race, being that you had these revolting text messages. Yeah, you brought up Illinois governors and prison time. And yeah, soon the worst governor in history is going to be joining them. Yeah, we have the worst governor, I think, in history. I don't even think Abigail Spanberger is all that bad compared to Governor JB. But Governor JB, pay attention to him because he is going to present himself as more moderate in the coming weeks. You saw that already. He appeared on Fox News. Brett Baer had him on, and then he even said something to the effect that Donald Trump did something good for Illinois in stopping the influx of illegal immigrants coming in. And he blasted the Biden administration. And you would think, oh man, this JB guy is kind of moderate. He's not. Don't be fooled. I'll see you guys actually tomorrow. We're going to be doing a fun little show. And you won't want to miss it because it's going to be explosive. I did some digging and some research at the state capitol. I was in the library for a little bit and reading some material. And I learned a lot about the Tejanos and the Texan independence, or how Texans gained their independence from Mexico. So we're going to be chatting a little bit about that when we come back on Saturday. You won't want to miss it. It'll be Saturday morning show. Subscribe always. Tell somebody to subscribe today. We're really close to 1,000. My goal is to get to 1,000 by Christmas time, 1,000 subs. And we couldn't have done it without you amazing people. I love you guys so much. You guys are great. And you can always support the program, patriotpumpenergy.com. Buy your bottle of premium pre-workout today using promo code conservativecat for $10 off. Until tomorrow, bye-bye. Love you.